So here's what I'm going to tell you based on my, limited knowledge of the pro game. One is that, look at, they don't simply post guys up anymore. It's not like the high school kid that doesn't want to play in the post because, he watches all his favorite guys. No one plays in the post. It's not that. It's if when you play in the low post, defenses have all sorts of options about how they're going to double you, right? And we both know that. So then they're in these preset rotations. So really, depending on what happens, right? You're just centering him in the low post and playing traditional bully ball doesn't, defenses can guard it too easy. So that's why they start stretching these guys out to the elbows, at the very least, the mid post, extended post area, and if not, the high post and out at the free throw line, because it makes it harder on defenses to react and contain.
Ladies and gentlemen, Zebra Stripes Podcast. I am Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LeJour of Bridgeton Academy. Coach Whit, I know you guys are finished up there. How is the weather? How is the golf swing?
The weather has been terrific for the past week or so. So it could, it didn't get here. I guess it got here just in time. This time of year for me is a little bit like the holidays. So there's celebrations galore. That includes some festivities and whatnot. Time to get healthy and outside and swing the golf club, which I have been doing, and settle into a what amounts to be a new routine for me, which is all positive. So things are good.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that anytime you get a new routine, the settling into it is the most difficult thing, right? Like,
yeah, you're 100% right about that. I mean, I kid with my wife, obviously. I say, hey, listen, honey, this is not as easy as, I make it look. Like, this is, this, I know when you go off to work, you think that, but I said, like, this takes, a serious mental commitment to make what I do work. And she obviously just rolls her eyes at me and goes out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's an underrated thing, because people just think when your school year is over, you just vacation for 2.5 straight months. Right? Like,
yeah.
Like, that's what people think. And I try to tell them is like, if and most coaches I'm sure can relate to this, but the idea of like a lot of free time, you almost don't know what to do with yourself. And then you end up doing stuff that are 100% not good for you to do. Like, if you have too much of it. So then you just start to fill those hours. And then all of a sudden your summer schedule is, is packed, but it's packed with like different things to try to keep you from, maybe some stuff that'll have you 25, 30 pounds overweight, or maybe have your liver a little on worse for wear,
I mean, I'm reminded of the quote. I remind myself, I guess, of the quote every now and again. Idle time is the devil's playground. So, I need to, keep an eye on myself and, try to keep it real. The funny thing about extended vacations, and I enjoy it, right? But a long time ago, talking to teachers, and both private and public, but more private, we don't get paid a ton of money. That's fine. That's a choice you make. You could go, do something else if you didn't like that. But recovery is part of the process. So the rest and all that is part of the process. And so to your point that, yeah, hey, look at, I'm not complaining. It's pretty dang good. But to do what you do, and I don't care what public school, private school, college level, maybe, I do think there's a reason that those vacations are there to recharge. And I think that, and I don't know if you ever fully catch up, by the way, either. I've debated that with some teaching friends of mine before, but that's there for a reason. Some people have sabbatical programs where you get time off paid in some cases, all in the name of recharging. So anyway, that's the deal. I know, you know, we'll see. So this is the start of a new summer, and I'm certainly happy about it. And things are in pretty good shape. Got the recruiting's going pretty good. So we've finished up this year with our guys and starting to turn the book to next year. So we'll see how everything continues to unfold.
Yeah, I think for me, we're not finished yet, but one of the things that has been balanced is people always talk about, oh, well, you know, you get paid year round and you don't have to work. And I'm like, that's not really true. I'm getting paid year round because I chose to have my pay be, you know, disseminated over this time when I'm not working. I got paid for what I did. Well, now you get a chance to, like, you know, go get another job. Yes, that's true. You can get another job. However, you know, August 1st rolls around, you know, pretty quickly, August 15th, whenever it is you reporting back to school. And if you haven't recharged those batteries, that fight to get to the first legitimate break of the first semester is a real tough fight. Like, you feel worn out the first 3 weeks of school. If you haven't given yourself time, like you said, over the summertime to recharge the batteries. And you know this, anytime you recharge the battery is never as good as the first time it was fully charged, you right. know, as you've alluded to. So all things that educators and coaches have to consider on how to balance their summer. You know who didn't have to consider balance yesterday? It was Jason Tatum. I'd like to start this by apologizing to Jason Tatum. I have long believed that Jason Tatum is not that guy. And full disclosure, I can't say that I'm still like, oh my God, Jason Tatum is that guy. But boy, when he's that guy, he looks like that guy. Like, when he has it rolling, when he gets in one of these situations where it doesn't matter where he shoots from, everything just looks like it's going in and everything goes in, he is fun to watch. Like, really, really fun to watch. He's always been a matchup problem because he's taller than people think. Like, when they just first, I think when people think about Jason Tatum, they think that he's the same size as Brown, and they're not. Like, right. He's way bigger than Brown. Like, he's way taller than Brown. So that's one of the things. Like, you saw him last night shooting jump shots over Embiid. Like, Embiid wasn't there. Embiid, a defensive player of the year type of defender, a guy who's long, who's athletic, and he was shooting over Embiid like Embiid did not exist. Like, when he has it going like this, it is otherworldly fun to watch. It's one of the most impressive. That 51-point game was one of the most impressive games I've seen out of a player in the last, gosh, like it was LeBron James-esque. It was that LeBron James when he just had it rolling because he had to, because there was no one else. He was like, you know what? Forget it. I'll do it myself. But even then, LeBron's most likely not going to give you 51.
Well, you know? Yeah, Doc Rivers said the same thing in his post-game comments. He said the last game he saw where someone did that was, in fact, LeBron in the Garden against Doc's Celtics. So, you definitely knew when you were watching it was something special. And I said at halftime to a good friend, you know, what a game. I mean, this is just good basketball. I thought both teams, in fact, just, you know, and again, game seven, I guess that's what it's supposed to be. But it was just a you know, dogfight, whatever analogy you want to make. And then the Celtics with Tatum just seemed to stick to the script better than the Sixers were able to, possibly because they're just better. So you offered an apology to Tatum. Mine would be to the Celtics. I've flipped, and you know, obviously, I picked the Sixers in this one. I've flipped and see the Celtics getting this thing done. I just questioned whether you could be as inconsistent as they've been in advance, but I'm going to put all my questions aside at this point. And the way they played on both offense and defense, maybe a little bit, reminded me a little bit of UConn, you know, who early in the year in the college game looked great, then muddled a little bit, and then in the tournament, oh my goodness God. So the Celtics start of the year were phenomenal, then went into their stuff, and you know, I just thought their offense and their defense yesterday was, I mean, at an extremely high level, which again is what you hope for. And if they are if they play anywhere near to that level, then they will win a championship. So my apology is not just to Tatum, really, but it's to Boston for, you know, for having doubt.
Yeah, I still have doubt because, well, number one, they're not my team, so I don't have to fan on them.
Right.
That's number one. Number two, that inconsistency should have cost them the series. This should not have went to a game seven. Like, there's so much, in my opinion, there's so much culpability on the Philadelphia side for not getting the job done in game six. Tatum even talked about it. Like, yo, they had us. They had us dead to rights. They had Tatum having a game that was going to be career defining, in my opinion, had he not come out and had the fourth quarter that he had. And you've got to find a way. And in the game versus in game seven, you've got to find a way to say, you know what? He's not going to beat us today. Right. He's got it going early. The first quarter, he had it going early. He would not have seen another single cup. There would have not been another switch off on a ball screen the rest of the day. Every time he came off a ball screen, we would have double teamed him and said, hey, Al Horford, you go out and score 35 tonight. Like,
essentially do the same thing the Celtics did by inserting the second big and then challenging
other people. Yep.
Right. Yeah. And I, you know, what's interesting there, and I don't disagree with you. I mean, that's what the league's all about, adjustments. What's interesting is he had been so bad in games 4, 5, and 6, really, that maybe they were lulled into a false sense of security.
You could be right, except that fourth quarter, he was bananas.
Well, what, like, game six you're talking about?
Game six.
Well, that
game
was really six, even not quarter. Just the whole fourth quarter. Wasn't it just the last?
Yeah, like four, the last, like, I don't know, whatever. 3.5, 4 minutes. But he went nuclear in those, like, minutes. Like,
right.
What was it? Like, double digits in that yeah. amount of time? Like, yeah. that's all a real scorer needs.
Yeah.
That's all a real scorer needs. I did a really cool thing on my, at least to me, for me, it was all my nerdom. But, like, I had a clip of the interview where he was talking about his mindset going into game six versus his mindset going into game seven. I think I might have sent it to you. But he talked about being – he felt like he was almost too locked in, almost too focused, like to a point where it hindered him from playing freely. And – It almost harkens back to what we were talking about before we came on with you in the golf analogy and being so wound up that every you weren't able to play free. If that's free, then they're in good hands. Like, if that's what he can do playing free. But this Miami matchup, it's not gonna be
cupcake. Before you get there, though, I would say this again. The good news, I mean, we might have all seen Tatum, like, take the next step at 25 years old in front of our own eyes because he just played harder. Even in those games before, he was more willing to do some other things, so he rebounded better than he typically has. He was a much more complete basketball player. He was much more a leader. And then I think it's what Eddie House was saying up here in Boston. You know, when you play that, even as a team or individual, but when you play defense, when you do all the other things, right, then your energy gets created for your offense and things can flow there too. So, no, I mean, we're not even talking about him whining to the officials, right? So a lot of things came together that no one expects him to, you know, score 40 or 50, although he's capable of it on a night. But, you know, if he just plays with that type of positive energy and effort, like you're saying, I mean, he's a handful. And then the Celtics have, you know, pieces, and they certainly have the pieces to beat the Heat. But that's a, you know, the Heat present their own challenge for sure.
Absolutely. I think the one thing we have to acknowledge is, and we've talked about it before, and clearly it's a thing, Jimmy Butler's a different guy in the playoffs.
Right.
He's 100% a completely different animal in the playoffs. Now, the thing that Boston has going for them is they can show him a myriad of different looks defensively, just individually, not only what they can do as a team, but individually. They could show him some like Tatum's going to be different on him than Brown's going to be different on him than Smart's going to be different on him. Like they have some. Then you come off the bench with some of those guys that are long and strong and athletic. Like they have options, but he doesn't seem to care who you put on him in the playoffs.
Yeah,
he seems to just think it's his time.
Yeah, and you know, I agree. I mean, no question, he's incredible, and you're right that, you know, Boston has options of players to guard him, you know, regardless of what the schematics, what the schemes are,
mm-hmm.
right? But, you know, it's funny that the NBA playoffs, historically we talk about, are just different too. So Jimmy's different, but the NBA playoffs are different. And so this round, like you also were talking about before we came on, we've got, you know, we've got a 8 seed and a 7 seed, you know, in the conference championships, you know, where the playoffs are different. And the NBA used to be roundly criticized for that, right? You don't need to watch a game till the fourth quarter. You don't really need to pay attention till the you know, but I would just say this, it's like watching the Masters. I mean, if we stay with some golf or any, you know, like superstars emerge when it's time to emerge, you know, you can't get knocked out. Right. But it's all about what happens when it's money time. So we're kind of getting down to that point.
If Eric Spoelstra is able to pull off, I mean, I already think he's one of the best.
Like, yeah, he's regarded as the best by most people. Say he's the best.
See, I don't think he's the best, but I think he's better. One of, I think Pop's the best, but that's just me. That's my own. That's my own because I like him more.
Yeah.
Right. Like I don't really know if it's because like I don't think Phil Jackson's the best. Like right. I don't think some of these other guys are the best. I think Pop is the best, but I also think Pop has had. Here's what I'll say. Spoelstra has enjoyed some of the same things that Pop has enjoyed, which is stability within the organization.
And yeah, so but then that, but then he creates it. What I think Spoelstra's done a little bit. I mean, maybe. Somewhat differently than Pop, but maybe not entirely so. He gets the most out of his team. So regardless of whether he's coaching, you know, multiple stars or whether he's coaching a depleted team like he is right now, minus Tyler Hero, you know, he finds a way. He coaches them up. So when I say he's the best, I just meant like Pop's in this conversation, but I'm not trying to go all time or nothing like that. I'm saying in the league today, I mean, he's regarded he's regarded by most experts as the best. And since we were talking schemes earlier, you know, people were talking about, okay, what chance does the Heat have and all of that. I mean, and one of the things obviously the Heat do, like maybe a high school coach would, or some college coach, some college coaches, Swalcher is not stubborn, man. He plays multiple zone defenses, man-to-man defenses. I mean, he's trying to muck it up any way he can. And again, undermanned, he almost has to. And the guys, you know, are responding. And Jimmy Butler is Jimmy Butler. So that's really it's a compelling storyline in its own right. It's going to be can the Celtics play to do their thing at the level they're doing it. And can Miami muck it up enough? And can Jimmy be Jimmy, even though he's going to have all these different bodies flying at him?
Yeah, I think the genius of Spoelstra is his ability to configure whatever he needs to configure in order to get it done. But he comes from that family. He comes from that family of by any means necessary. Like, it doesn't have to be cute. Doesn't have to be pretty. It just has to get the job done, you know. And so, like, I think for Boston, it's a really simple recipe. Don't ever get into a half court with these dudes. Make these dudes play wide open, and see if 87-year-old Kevin Love can beat it up and down the court with your guys. Like, this might not be an Al Horford type of series, you know?
Or it might be, because one of the things I would do in the half court, because, you know, the best coaches and teams can slow teams down. Like, I don't, you know, Boston's just not going to be able to run willy-nilly over these guys. So if I'm the Celtics over the next couple of days, guess what? I am repping up my zone offense. It just can't be, you know, chuck and duck zone offense, or you're going to get yourself in trouble. You'll have a hard time getting a rhythm, which was the key, obviously. In addition to Tatum's exploits yesterday, the rhythm of that offense, what they're calling random flow offense, which came, again, oftentimes in transition. But the movement and spacing, their ability to find the open man was phenomenal. So now you got to do it against zones. So I'd be repping up my zone offense. And in which case now, again, not to disparage your point, but it may be, you know, when you can space the floor with multiple shooters against zone, that certainly helps you. Or you can, you know, guys like Horford are a possible threat inside or outside, right? Depending on the movement. But what we all know you can't do is just stand around and look like you've never seen a zone before in your life, because that just makes the zone even stronger.
Yeah. I think the fact that the Celtics have three guys that can penetrate, right? In the starting lineup. They've got more guys that can come off the bench and do it, but they've got three guys in your starting lineup that can penetrate. They've got another two guys that I think are legitimate penetrators coming off the bench, right? White can penetrate. Brogdon can penetrate. But then they also are all pretty good at catching and shooting. So I think that's your collapse the zone, get it out, you know, because all you need is a few of them to go down. The beauty of what the Heat are able to do is if they can get you to miss shots.
Right.
They can get you to miss shots, then cool. But if a few of them goes down, they've got no other choice but to come out of there. And when they come out of there, it's got to be like speeding. Like, you have to get reckless driving tickets. Like, not just, you know, 10 over, 12 over the limit. I'm talking about, you know, 85 in the school zone. You got to be going. I think you just burn them out. They're not built to just run up and down like that.
You're saying you're the Celtics, you try the to Celtics. Burn Miami out.
You get them out that zone, like, don't give them the bailout by still being in a half court offense when they're playing you man to man. I'm saying you've got to get it in. Pass, shots going up. Pass, attack the basket. That's the thing, by the way, that has been lost on why the Lakers have been successful in the playoffs. They're not playing the mathematics game. They're not playing that mathematics game. That, oh, a three is better than a two because if you shoot this many threes, they're like, oh, word, you're going to let us just make 25 straight layups? We're going to make 25 straight layups, and we're going to dare you to make 15 threes.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, the Heat are doing the exact same damn thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, 100%.
But they don't have an AD.
No, but they have Jimmy, and he, you know, Jimmy is more reliable than AD.
Yeah, but Jimmy doesn't have a LeBron. That's what I'm saying. It's like if we're saying a playoff Jimmy, I'll put playoff Jimmy up here with a LeBron. Playoff Jimmy is fantastic. Right. He's fantastic. The difference is Bam's not AD.
No, but this is a big series for Bam. You know, I think he's an X factor for the Heat in this series. I mean, I think that stands to reason.
Absolutely.
And he's hurt Boston in the past too. He's given Tatum some fits at the rim and all that sort of stuff. So I think I just think the Heat culture, you know, that you already talked about, their toughness is not phony.
No, it's not fake.
So, you know, that's not going to be James Harden falling over, throwing the ball out of bounds, and then, you know, limping back on defense with Doc Rivers turning to his assistant saying, like, what's going on? You know, like, so the Heat are a little tougher operation. And then those guys that can shoot the ball are going to have to come up. I mean, Duncan Robinson, the local – you know, area guy is going to have to come up big for them again, minus Hero and Gabe Vincent and the other shooter that's escaping me right now. Yeah. I think
Kyle Lowry has to have a Toronto-like series.
Yeah, yeah.
He can't play like he has played at times in Miami. He has to really be able to give them some legitimate work on both sides of the ball.
I'm gonna, you know, just cut into the chase. I'm gonna be foolish and just say, look, it's all sounds good.
Gentlemen's suite 4-1.
Yes, exactly.
I'm thinking 4-1 gentlemen's suite.
Yeah, and that
looks so good, man. Oh my god! Right. If that's the Boston we're getting,
right?
If we're getting that Game 7 Boston, right, it's gonna be hard for anybody to beat them.
Right.
Anybody.
Now you're not gonna get that, you know, necessarily four straight times and you won't need it, but boy, you get anything approaching that. And I think that it had to be a confidence builder because they know that. Because again, even if Tatum doesn't shoot like that, if they take care of the ball the way they did, they defend the way they did going to Philly, like that's just a confidence building team. Puts all any doubts that they had in Missoula themselves or, you know, all of that, all the noise just goes away.
And props to Missoula. Like, you got to give Missoula some props because, yeah, Tatum had it going offensively, but defensively, they held the MVP in check. They had him checked up. And,
yeah,
you know, you got to get it. You got to give your head coach some credit for that.
Speaking of that, the only – because I think most people are giving Doc credit for getting the Sixers to a seventh game, getting them to a chance with a couple minutes to go in game six, a chance to close out the Celtics. So Doc Rivers gets tons of props. But I look at it, though, and I do – part of me says schematically again, either – you know, like, I don't know. The Sixers, maybe just their roster is just flawed. You know, that Doc doesn't have – you know, his roster is just – not as deep, obviously, as the Celtics. Or Embiid, you know, your point before we got going here, Embiid and Jokic, what are we going to say? Are we come to the crossroads of the big man? Like, where, you know, is it the referendum? That's the word I was looking for. The referendum on the big man. I like Joel Embiid. So I'm looking at it saying, you know, there's something lacking, either schematically or within his own fight to take that to another level, or it's just you can't do it with what we're going to call traditional big.
My, and since we're here, we might as well get into it, and this will be kind of our transition from you know, the Eastern right. Conference to the Western Conference. I think for Embiid, how many coaches is it going to take? Right? How many coaches is it going to take to unlock whatever that is that that needs to be in him to get where he needs to go in order to be the focal point of a championship caliber team? He was very concerned with being an MVP. I don't know how concerned he was with being a champion. He was very concerned with being an MVP. But are you concerned with being a champion? Because if you're a champion, then you as the dominant big and MVP caliber guy, you can never have a 10-rebound game. Look at Shaq. People talk all of that noise about Shaq. Look at Shaq and Shaq's numbers in the playoffs. 14 rebounds, 18 rebounds, 17. Like, Shaq in the playoffs isn't out here conserving. He's not out here wasting time. He's not out here playing games with you. When you're 7'2" and 270-something pounds or whatever, you know, Embiid is, like, when you're that big and that dynamic, you don't have to play the face-up game and try to dribble around people or jump, shoot like mid-range jump shots over their head. When you're like, to a certain extent, AD has to do that because AD isn't Embiid. He's not that big. He's not that strong. So if you're that, sometimes you just need to bully people. And that's a mentality. And I don't know if he has that mentality. I don't know if he has it.
Yeah. That's where I honestly, that's where I say the scheme can be called into question. So here's what I'm going to tell you based on my, you know, limited knowledge of the pro game. One is that, look, it, they don't simply post guys up anymore. It's not like the high school kid that doesn't want to play in the post because, you know, he watches all his favorite guys. You know, no one plays in the post. It's not that. It's if when you play in the low post, you know, defenses have all sorts of options about how they're going to double you, right? And we both know that. So then they're in these preset rotations. So really, depending on what happens, right, you're just centering in the low post and playing traditional bully ball doesn't, you know, defenses can guard it too easy. So that's why they start stretching these guys out to the elbows, at the very least, the mid post, extended post area. And if not, the high post and out at the free throw line, because it makes it harder on defenses to react and contain. So I think that's, but to me, if you're a multi-talented, versatile offensive threat, the way Embiid is, then it's really all about possession by, and it's a little bit like Tatum from a different position. It's, can you score at each level? So mm-hmm. each time down, are you playing with a purpose? Giving them
something different.
Yeah, and does your offense, both the personnel and the scheme, allow you to do that in a, you know, concentrated, intense manner, whatever. You get what I'm saying. So that's where I would go with that to me. Now, when it
what would be the counter to, well, I mean, Doc had KG and KG did all of that. So it's not like Doc's scheme has changed, maybe his scheme has changed, but it's not like he doesn't know how to use a guy like that. He had KG. KG would score with his back to the basket. He would do mid-range stuff. He would step out and hit that long just inside the three-pointer, you know, jump shot that he did. He did all three of those things in a team that is that had elements that were the same. Now, I don't think the point guard is the same, and maybe that's the rub, because I'm not a James Harden guy. But
yeah, no, right. Nor
maybe
nor,
that's the rub.
Yeah, and they didn't have Pierce or Allen either.
Yep.
Right. So the big three were the big three for a reason.
But I mean, they have offensive.
Yeah.
They have offensive players to put around them. You know, Maxey is an offensive player. I just wonder, is that just not what Embiid is comfortable doing? Like, he, that part, the mid-level, the deeper, like high post, all that stuff you were talking about, yeah, he's cool with. But when it's time to just, you know, dart down, throw somebody on your hip on a block real quick, get the ball and make a quick move and go up and power up, is that just not something he's comfortable with?
Yeah, that I don't know. I don't know. I'm gonna say I doubt it. I like him, you know. So I think I think they have to. I think they're gonna spend the summer scheming and taking a look at that. I think James Harden is a you know, part of the issue. You know, he may not be the best complement for Embiid. So I don't think it's all a coincidence that, you know, so Harden had a couple big games and they're good Embiid out, but then he has bad, you know, the more they try to get Embiid involved, Harden disappears.
Harden's never been able to play without the ball.
Right.
And that's the problem when you have someone else that needs to be ball dominant.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, let's face it, that's how Phil Jackson, you know, that's why the triangle became so popular when he took over the Bulls.
Yeah.
They said, okay, we got to find a way that this thing involves more than isolation basketball with the greatest player who ever played. So,
I think it's interesting because I don't give Doc as much credit as others do. And I know that people have been critical of Doc and I've been defensive of Doc. Right. But I don't give Doc as much credit because I don't care how you got here. When you have the chance to get it done, you got to close the show. Like you can't let it get to it. He didn't push it to a game seven. He let it get to a game seven. Like, they had that game six. Like, to me, game seven is you were Boston in the Garden. Like, yeah. Game seven, you were going to have a hard time winning that game regardless.
Yep.
But game six, on your own home court with a lead, you've got to find a way to close that show.
With a great crowd behind you.
With a great crowd. It's Philly. Like, yeah. You've got to find a way to close that show. There's not a person in the world that thought once that game went to game seven that Philadelphia was winning it.
Right.
Like, everybody just like, you know, that ship has sailed. And so I can't give you credit on the back end for getting to a game seven when game six, it should have been over. Now you could have gotten all the credit. You could have shut up all the naysayers. Hey, you know, we talked about Doc, blah, 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 but he got it done versus the best team in the playoffs, and he got it done in six games. He didn't even need seven. He got it done in six games. So, no, you don't get the pass. And I think this offseason, Philadelphia is probably going to be thinking about whether or not it might be time for a new voice.
Yeah, I think they will too. But and the other thing, I know we're going to talk about maybe some of the coaching carousel in the NBA. But I'm also not going to give a free pass to Embiid. I like him and all that.
No free pass.
No, I know. I think I'm a little more forgiving than you are. But my point is, you know what Jokic is doing. Just to compare, you know, is, and again, I think you got to be careful anytime you compare players because we're, you know, just like golf swings now, theme of the day, you know, players are different. So you got to be careful. Swings are different. Players are different. A lot of ways to play the games. So, but Jokic is a dynamic post threat. And he's so dynamic because he definitely doesn't take possessions off. He scores the ball from multiple levels again. And boy, when, you know, does he read defenses and knows where that ball's got to get to. And you know, my, you know, kind of passes the ball like my old friend Larry Bird that I always bring up here. So, I mean, to that
Jokic
end.
Jokic is the big man's last hope, right?
Yep.
Jokic is the quintessential five, and even the quintessential five in a new age version, right? Like, he is the last of you being able to say, let's build around the big man. Because if he can't get it done, If he can't get it done with the supporting cast healthy that he has, and in a West that seems ripe for the taking for anybody that's there, then when will he get it done?
Would you, if I pick the Nuggets now to win the West, would you send me a bottle of Casamigos, kind of return the favor? That bottle of Grand Marnier that you have yet to acknowledge on air that did make it to your.
I did. I thought I acknowledged it last time that I got my bottle.
I don't know. We're gonna.
You know what, ladies and gentlemen, I got my bottle of Grand Marnier, and I am appreciative. However, I mean.
It's too late to jump on the Nuggets bandwagon.
Do you say the Nuggets are going to win when they're the number one seed in the whole thing?
Well, I'm just saying everyone was no one was picking the Nuggets too far along in this thing at the start. But now, as the I've already mentioned UConn once. I'll use them again in this reference here. Like, the more I've watched the Nuggets, I say, oh, boy, are they a complete team. And, again, they're –
here's my pushback on this, and not just because I'm a Lakers fan. I'm not even going to talk about the Lakers yet. I'm going to talk about what I saw from Phoenix. I saw DeAndre Ayton sell his team. That's what I saw. I saw DeAndre Ayton not even put forth an effort. It was almost like he went, oh, this is how y'all treated me in contract negotiations, and this is what the coach thinks about me, and blah, blah, blah. Watch this. At the time where y'all need me the most, I'm just gonna be like a zombie. I'm just gonna walk through this thing. And I'm gonna allow this guy to just go bananas. And guess what? For whatever we want to say, Anthony Davis is not going to do that. If Anthony Davis is on the field, if he's on the court, which sometimes can be an if, but if he's on the court, there's a reason why the Lakers beat the Nuggets in the bubble. It's because Anthony Davis was too much for Jokic to handle.
Yeah,
That was the difference in the game, in the series. Anthony Davis played like the best player in the NBA versus Jokic in that series in the bubble, and right. Lakers won.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can play to that level. I don't know if he could play to that level. But if he is what he's been versus like these other teams when he's been on, then the Nuggets have a long day because LeBron has been able to relatively chill throughout these first couple of series. Like, he hasn't had to go Super Saiyan. He hasn't had to go like to that next level that we know LeBron can still access when he needs to. He may not be able to do it every night, but he can access it when he needs to. And if you can get AD playing at that level, and LeBron can say, okay, now it's me time. Like, now it's time for me to remind you guys that I'm not just what you've seen, which you were all impressed at, but I can still do this. It's a hefty task for the Nuggets.
Yeah, I think it's one they're up for. I think Jokic obviously has improved. I think he's got a hungry team. I think Jamal Murray is, obviously playing at a high level himself. I just like how, connected. But I will agree with you. It's hard. It's a hard evaluation of the Nuggets because the Suns were so bad. And, I agree with your take on Ayton. I just think, that's what happens when one guy is just that much better than another. The problem the Suns have is I don't care whether Ayton's happy or not. He's just not I think they made a mistake in signing him, and I know they were going back and forth on it, but right now his stock is so low they have to seriously consider moving him. And to your point about the big man, right? I don't know. Like, I don't know if DeAndre Ayton, who was number one pick coming out of Arizona, I don't know if he's the answer for a team. I don't even know. I don't
Well, I would have never taken him number one overall.
Right.
That's just me. And I like big men, and he wasn't like my kind of guy because he doesn't have any offensive game.
Yeah.
And you have to have an offensive game in order to be a number one overall pick, in my opinion. Like, you need to have either an offensive game or the ability to develop one.
Right. Like a
consistent one.
Right. And that's, I mean, I've seen those NBA guys, those coaches, that most of whom we don't even know their names, they are incredible at developing players. So, you know, the fact, I think that's the maybe the most damning thing at all. His lack of development obviously shows you that his own commitment
to that's what I was about to say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just think it's, you know, it's apparent because they, hey, look at, there are guys that just get better in the NBA, and there are coaches that know what they're doing to help guys get better in that process.
Here's the problem. If you're the number one overall pick and you're smelling yourself, do you feel like you need to improve? Right, or do you feel like you are who you are? And then when you get off that and they hand you $170-something million check, you know, or $1 million contract, what's your incentive to get better? Who are the guys that we really see like improve that come from zero to limited offensive game? It's usually that guy that was the 37th pick, you know, who, oh, this guy's a rim runner and he's a defensive specialist. And then he gets into the lab and they work on him and they work on him, and all of a sudden now he earns that $90 million contract. But now he's hungry because now he wants to show people, and he's developed this work ethic because he had to in order to stick. But if you're an Ayton.
Yeah, I don't hate your analogy. You know, I mean, or I guess I don't hate your point. One guy that does come to mind that, there's probably more, but, you know, Jaylen Brown was a number three pick that, you know, in my opinion, has really developed his game. Now, he wasn't negligent on offense. Not like he didn't have a game, but I'll tell you what, he had a lot of holes in his game. His jump shot, reliable jump shot, was a hole. His ability to, you know, bounce the ball and take care of it, which still sometimes rears its head, but that was a hole. I think his passing, So again,
you've got two on the Celtics.
Right.
You've got two of those guys. You got Marcus Smart. The same, you could say the same thing about.
Yep.
But you want to know one of the things that was on both of their scouting reports coming out of college? Work ethic, heart, desire. Yep. Like, none of that was ever questioned with Marcus Smart. None of that was ever questioned with Jaylen Brown. None of that was ever questioned with Williams.
Right.
From Tennessee.
Yeah.
Those guys had that in spades. And so you expect guys that have that to get better.
Yeah.
Like, people thought Ayton was a prima donna at Arizona.
Yeah.
So, like, how is he going to all of a sudden get in the trenches if he's been sitting on pillows his entire life? Like, you've been sitting on pillows, guy, you're not going to get better. And so I think that matters. If you're asking me, he would have been the first person out of Dodge. I would have apologized to Monty Williams for blowing his team up to bring KD in so late in the season, or hurt KD. Like, and then we would figure it out from there. But the idea that, you know, they decided to move on to a coach, move on from Monty Williams, is laughable to me. If you look at where they were before Monty Williams and where they are now, comparatively speaking, they're in a way better situation. And quite honestly, Williams and his staff, their development of all of those players that they shipped out to bring in KD is part of the reason that they weren't able to handle the firepower of Denver, because Denver's coming off the bench with dudes. They're just bringing dudes in. They can't put them all out on the court at the same time. When Phoenix was Phoenix before KD with all of those dudes, they had that same ability. Hey, we're going to come off with guys. Hey, Chris Paul, you can miss a couple days, a couple games, because we've got all of these other guys that can hold the fort. They just didn't have it. Not enough bullets in the gun.
Phoenix gambled and they lost. I think it's a gamble most everyone would have taken. I think it's a gamble that obviously, I don't know if it cost Monty Williams his job, but has possibly set the franchise back. It's a gamble that's put KD now at a defining moment in his career because he took a, you know, hit with this type of series.
I'll say is he played his ass off, though. I will say that for him. I mean, they had him at one point in time. He was guarding Jokic.
Yeah.
Like, you got KD. No offense, but come on, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
How do you have Kevin Durant out here trying to score 30 plus and then turning around and having to guard Jokic? That is a coach going, yo, I ain't got nobody else. Yo, KD, I need you. That's a coach going, what else do I have? Ayton is a sieve. Yeah. Ayton is a sieve. I can't even put him out there.
Right. Jock Landale's a scrapper. But
Landale's
he's only
a hustler. Right. You know, he's good for your six fouls, but that's it. Yeah. What else am I going to do? So the idea that you blame Monty Williams for this is just ridiculous to me. And that's clearly what they're saying by the firing.
Yeah, I don't think they're saying that. I think they're saying, hey, Monty, we gambled. We lost, you know. And, oh, by the way, I know you can't coach Ayton. And we aren't sure we can move him. So we got to try a new voice. That's the way that conversation goes.
So you think it's – okay, well, then their move still cost – Monty Williams.
Yes. Yeah. Oh no. There. No. It did. It did. Yeah. And I'm saying. And so.
Because I'm pretty sure Monty Williams did not sign off on re-signing Ayton. I would be 100% confident in my thought. I haven't talked to anyone. I don't know Monty Williams from a bag of grapes. But I guarantee you that man did not go, yeah, we should definitely. You guys should definitely spend 100 and whatever million on this dude. That I don't even really want to play. I'd rather play Jake Voskel over this dude right now.
I'm always mindful of what former Marquette guard Jimmy Boylan, and he was the guy that hired me at New Hampshire. But when he was with the Cavaliers and Tyronn Lue and all of that, when Jimmy was it's one of the last conversations I had with him. I said, well, what's the biggest challenge in the NBA? You know, and I, stupid me, thought he was going to say something like getting guys to play hard or 82 games or something like that. I never forgot it my whole life. And he said, the biggest challenge in the NBA is the money. And he said, because, you know, the guys that are making, you know, the biggest money, have the biggest bag. I mean, they know that there's no human on earth worth that kind of money. So trying to keep them right, that's a task for everybody. And then the guys that don't have it obviously want it. So you're trying to keep that thing moving. So he said, you know, if you ask me what the biggest challenge in the NBA is, it's managing the money and the psychology of the money, if you will. And, that to your point about how it comes down to how able the individual is to, how individually accountable he can be and mature, I guess, to some degree. And as I'm saying that, I'm thinking about the Ja Morant situation, completely off topic, but another situation where you go, okay, it's not money, but it's habits, and you've already been warned. So, man, that's maybe in the NBA, you have to. Those are some of the biggest challenges. So maybe Monty Williams, saying, you know what, if we get him his money, he in fact is going to be okay. You know, when he signs, you know, everything's okay. But no idea.
Just quickly on the Ja Morant thing.
Let me finish that up right there. Yeah, and then you can go to Ja Morant. Because you know, just here in Boston, we were talking about, you know, Jaylen Brown. If he didn't make second or third team NBA and doesn't get his max contract deal, then he's out the door now that he does make it, right? So, again, there's another case with the NBA rules that money's playing an incredible role in the future of the franchise, you know, and how things play out. So, anyway.
Yeah, but that might be the best thing for him.
Yeah, oh, no. I mean,
like,
some
of these Robins need to understand their Robin.
Yep.
And go, look, Robin had a really good career.
Yep.
No one sends the signal up for Robin. Right. Like, go ahead and keep letting Tatum take all of those slings and arrows. And yep. I'll just sit over here being number two, making just as much money.
Yep.
But not being expected to be the man. Like, you go somewhere else, Jason Brown. Or Jaylen Brown, excuse me.
Yeah.
You go somewhere else, Jaylen Brown, where you're expected to be the one, and you're going to find out really quickly you're not the one.
Right. And you may be, but you know, the other part of that, which I know you know, is hey, guess what? If this thing does work, if the chemistry is okay, then you know, where does winning fit in? So, like, you're winning, and you guys actually potentially have a chance to win for a long time, rivaling anything that the Warriors have done, or we were talking about Pop earlier. So, Boston, you know, with Manu and Duncan, like, theoretically, you could have something really special in Boston if, in fact, you can cross this next hurdle or two.
Yeah, I think if they can get it done, the only difference is going to be is they're not going to receive a cheat code. They're not going to get a KD cheat code, like a prime KD cheat code.
Right.
Like, that's the only difference between what the Warriors were able to do. But could they? And I, not for nothing, I just think the margins for championships are so thin today because everyone's got people now, right?
Yes.
It's not a big three anymore. It's a two and an ensemble. You need two and an ensemble.
Hey, right? before you give me the Ja Morant take, do you have the Lakers or Nuggets? I do have the Nuggets. I have the Nuggets, and I think it'll be a great series. And obviously, I've already said I have Boston.
So what I started with. At the beginning of the playoffs, I said that the Memphis was going to be a really daunting task for the Lakers. But if they got past Memphis, they would not be afraid of anybody in these playoffs. Yep. I stand by that.
Yep.
I don't unmute your mic. Can you hear me? It's saying that your mic is muted. I can't unmute.
You hear me now?
I do.
Okay, I wonder how that happened. I did not touch anything.
I don't know, but I can't do it from my end. So it had to be something that happened on your end.
Interesting. I got very loud on my end too. So I don't know.
Well, when you lean forward, you get louder. And then when you lean back,
I know. You know what? That's not true. Because no, I mean, the sound coming in doesn't matter whether I'm forward or back.
Oh, you meant you're getting... I meant your voice gets louder when you lean in.
No, yeah, I get that. No, gotcha. You were coming in at a lot of decibels. So I look forward to listening to the airing of this, so I know, you know, what you just said. I'm not going to ask you to repeat it. We usually have
I 100% want to compete it. Compete it. What the hell? Because I am bullish on the Lakers.
Okay.
Once they got out of that first round, like, now everything matches up for them well, I believe.
Can we put a bottle on it?
Of course we can. Casamigos.
Casamigos, please, for me.
Casamigos. You mean? It's tequila season.
Okay, so it's a bottle of Casamigos.
Bottle of Casamigos. I don't want any white, though. I need at least a Reposado.
I think I told you, you know, Jack's shop down in Savannah. You know, there's no Drizzly. Shop. Savannah does not support Drizzly, apparently.
But, oh, yeah, no. Don't worry. I will make sure that you get it, even if I have to call in some favors.
Yeah.
Casamigos it is.
And I want Drizzly dropping it off of my doorstep, if possible.
You guys have Drizzly, like, in...
Look it. I mean,
your area, about, Maine?
We haven't talked about this in a long time, but I mean,
Bridgeton is booming.
I mean, booming and bullish. Bridgeton got the Queen's Head Pub, a potential another new sponsor for our program, opening up in the next 2 weeks, right in downtown Bridgeton. Queen's Head Pub gonna be
downtown. Bridgeton is gonna have another pub.
Yeah,
down. You can almost do a pub. You can almost do a pub crawl in Bridgeton now.
I think we're to that point.
Yeah. I may just have to take a flight and just see what it's about.
Might be
just come on. But no, I really do believe that the Lakers are playing with a level of confidence, and I can't go against them. Like, all right. Not only just as a fan, but as what I said earlier in our broadcast, I'm not willing to flip on it. Like, Jokic is going to have to like prove me wrong to a championship. Like, if he doesn't win a championship, then my thing on Jokic stands.
Well,
like, none of that's going to matter to me.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's super good,
and their team is good, and he's
really, really good.
I think Mike Malone is cut from the same cloth that Eric Spoelstra is, so he's not a neophyte either.
Yeah, but I don't think Malone's on Spoelstra's level. That's just my
opinion. I'm gonna say, listen, just like I'm not gonna make
this. Isn't his first rodeo with, like, he's been to these things before and he hasn't gotten it done.
No, and you know what? Sometimes it takes a while. Same thing we're talking about with these Celtics, you know. So I mean, if we're bullish on Boston, you know, which we have every reason to be, then I'm just telling you, I'm bullish on the Nuggets.
These Celtics are on their third coach.
And I picked, for God's sake. So what the hell do I know?
Anyone, I know, right? I'm still mad because my Philly pit looked good game six. Yeah. My Philly pit looked great game six. All right, so quickly, this John Morant thing. Does it bother you that he is essentially being touted as a bad person, even though he hasn't broken any laws?
Well, I'm not sure, like the law thing. So to your point, I'm not sure you're allowed to brandish a firearm in a strip club. Maybe you are.
He didn't brandish the firearm in a strip club.
Going back, what did he do?
He was just in the strip club, wilding out with his shirt off, but doing what 20-something-year-olds with millions on millions of dollars do.
But I'm saying,
I don't think he had a gun in a strip club. And while you're talking, because go right ahead, because I'm going to look it up. Okay.
I guess that's what I thought. And then to your point, the incident, which again,
yes, you're right. Gun at a Colorado strip club.
Right.
Okay.
I thought so. So like,
but not like aiming it up. He just had it. No, he had it.
So that's fine. Again, so like you said, and then the laser, you know, with the Indiana Pacer crew where they, you know, supposedly, you know, gun laser, not him, now his friend pointed at, you know, someone post game. So, and then this one, you know, whatever, multiple things. So yeah, I don't know. Look, I don't know whether he's a good person or bad. I'm not going to go there. I'm not labeling him. I'm certainly not labeling good guy or bad. I don't even know him. And let's face it, I don't know what percentage of America, but by the way, like, we got here in Maine some gun toting people like everywhere claiming Second Amendment and all that stuff without getting too serious about this stuff. So, yeah, I mean, got to be careful not to be too hypocritical about your stance on guns when we've got the current situation going on in the country. And now, like, is Ja Morant the
the poster child for gun problems. That's the most ridiculous thing known to the, you know, man.
So that's part of my issue, right? It's optics versus, you know, and I talked about this on my own Talk Spicy podcast a little bit, but it's optics. Are the optics bad? Yeah, right? Nobody's going to argue that. The optics are bad. But then when we stop and we, like, what did he do wrong? If that's his gun, which I don't know and I'm not going to dig into, because I don't, like, most of America cares more about certain stuff than I do. Like, I'm not, if he wants to ruin his life with guns, I'm not here to, you know, whatever. I don't even like guns. So, but if that's his gun and he is, like, he's in a video and he just has the gun, he's not, like, pointing it at the screen or pointing it at people or whatever, then what's the issue?
Right.
The optics are bad. So if you're saying, hey, Ja Morant, you 23, 24-year-old, you know, super millionaire because we gave you $250 million, like, you need to be able to make every right move. You need to be LeBron James. Guess what? There's not everybody's LeBron James. Not every if I had to live my personal life in my early 20s out in public view, there would be a lot of things said about me that I don't believe are true, but the optics wouldn't look good, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I had to live the 20s out. So, like, yeah, it's bad optics. Yeah, you probably shouldn't do it because you are him. But for the Grizzlies' response to be, oh, we're gonna suspend him at the beginning of the offseason, what good does that do? Like, what good is suspending him at the beginning of the offseason gonna do? Well, How about say, hey, we're going to work with him, and then we're going to evaluate by the beginning of the regular season, or by the beginning of the next season, a zero tolerance policy. And if something happens, then he's gone for X amount of games, or whatever. We're gonna look into possibly terminating his contract. Like,
well, I would hope they would do all of that. So I agree with you. And the possible good that it does with them coming out is just like these colleges do with the self-reporting, right? The idea is the enforcement people will come in a little less, right, which is already being speculated on because you've taken steps. And so they're helping the NBA potentially take maybe a lesser stance, because as a league, and you're dead on right, the optics are we can't have this be part of the look, and for a lot of reasons, including just the idea that young people look at this stuff and now star players brandishing a gun, and that's just not something that we want to be be about, if you will.
I can understand that.
But, so I'm but saying, yeah. So I'm
the,
saying
the outrage from the outside of people going, oh my gosh, he needs to be. Like, come on, man. My governor was on a commercial, like, for an advertisement for re-election with a gun. Like,
yeah.
What? It's not the like the is the gun the problem, or are the optics the problem? Because right. If the optics of, oh, well, here's this young black man and his friend listening to hip hop music. You know what I'm saying? And he's got a gun in his hand. Is that the optics that makes it worse? Or do people really see something that they feel like is a negative, like is a problem outside? Because what the NBA thinks, we know why the NBA thinks that. Hey, man, you mess with our money. Like, you're a face of our league. You're messing with our money. We get that. But the rest of the – I just don't know. So many times to just heap on people, man. And this kid is trying to—he's trying to figure it out in real time.
And would I mean, look at, and the reality is, would it be the same? Like if I don't know who the who's the closest thing to Larry Bird in the NBA today? Who's the who's the white hope? Is there one? But
there's a lot of white hopes. They're just all European.
Yeah. So if Jokic right had a rifle, I was saying if your average yeah. if a pretty good white playing dude started toting a rifleman, right, Chuck Connors, started chucking a rifleman's rifle over his shoulder. It's possible the public perception would be 100%
different. How about if one of those guys were holding an AR-15,
right?
Because of whatever in their country and blah blah blah. Like, I just wonder if the I don't know, but I have a good feeling because I've seen we've kind of seen these things play out before, and it's like, from my perspective, I don't want them to be in it because I just don't want there to be another negative narrative on a young, athletic black man who has a chance to grow up and turn into the next person that can do great things, not only for himself and his family, but for his community, like your LeBron James, like your Kevin Durant's, like your Steph Curry's. Like, we have so many great examples of black men who are now into their 30s, and are such like pillars of our national community that I never want that light to be diminished because of something like a 24-year-old's doing. Because they're 24. Not everybody figures it out. Like,
And that's okay. But that's right. And that's got to be okay. It can't, the message can't be you can't do that or you can't. Right? It's got to be okay. Anyway.
Are you okay with Budenholzer being fired?
I no. I mean, there's only one way for me that I'm doing that. And that's, if in fact Giannis, and anyone else, Chris Middleton or someone on the inside said, hey, by the way, we have to make a change. And if it was one of those deals, then sure, okay, we'll do it. But other than that, I think it's garbage. I do think, similar to what I was talking about with regard to Embiid and Doc and schemes, I think the Milwaukee scheme has to take I think they probably got to tweak the way they play a little bit to take more advantage of what he brings to the table. So without getting into the whole five out stuff and him just coming down, playing bully ball in transition, I think that, so if basketball people on the inside of that decision said, hey, look it, we got to make some changes here, then okay, I get it. But on the surface, garbage.
Yeah. I just, all of
2 years, firings. 2 years, 2 years from a championship. Right. I think Vogel was
1 year.
That's what, yeah. Right.
1 year removed. Like, one championship removed. Right. Like, that to me just seems ridiculous. Like, you've got two championship-level coaches who are now out of jobs, and if they switched positions, nobody would blink. Like, if the Bucks hired Monty Williams tomorrow, people would go, it's a good hire. I like that. If the Suns hired Budenholzer tomorrow, oh, okay, I like that. That's a good pick.
Yeah, and you're forgetting Nick Nurse in Toronto.
I'm not forgetting Nick Nurse in Toronto.
Oh, you don't like Nick Nurse?
No, I think I like Nick Nurse, but I think it was time for him to go. Like, okay. I think he had enough time. I think for me, the number's three.
Yeah.
You get three years as a honeymoon period or whatever, like a grace period from a championship. Give you 3 years. I feel like what Toronto tried to do was a personnel experiment, and Nick Nurse took that personnel experiment as far as he could go.
Right.
So I don't think that his firing was as egregious as Budenholzer and Monty Williams. That's what I mean by that.
Right. And you get 3 years as a post honeymoon, unless your nickname is Pop, and then you get a lifetime contract.
Yeah. Because if you do 3 years times four, that's 12 years, right?
Well, I guess so. If you did the math, that's pretty good math. I like that.
So,
I like that. I just, I like it. I like that. I'm a Pop supporter, so I was just trying to be a jerk, and you called me on it. But I think the Pop analogy is like Belichick in football here in New England, which is to say, now, wait a second, which way is this thing going, and how much license are we giving this guy?
Yeah. Well, I think for Pop, the legitimate question is going to be, okay, well, you had the chance to kind of keep the ball rolling. Something happened with Kawhi.
Yeah.
Right? And yep. Since Kawhi, that scouting department hasn't been able to land another one, like another guy that is a Hall of Fame caliber player. But I also think when you make the playoffs as long as they make it, you're having to hit with mid-round to late first-round picks all the time. That's a lot more margin for error. So let's see what he does over these next couple of years. Does he is one of these guys that he has in the fold, or is one of the guys that he will have, are they going to be that dude? And if not, then maybe it's time for him to step aside as well. I think for Belichick, though, it's like, well, we're way too early to all of a sudden be like, it's time to move on.
Right.
Like Patriots fans have to remember who they were. Like, whoa, people. Whoa. Y'all remember who we were before Belichick, right? Like, y'all ran out on Pete. Pistol Pete, y'all got Pistol Pete out of here.
Yeah, but we did, you know, I do think Parcells doesn't get enough credit around New England for his role in the great turnaround either, though. So,
but there was Parcells, then there was Pete.
Yep.
Right? Yep. Pete actually made a decent little run.
Yep.
But nobody was ever a champion.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, so that's all I'm saying is and then he did it. With the groceries not always being premium groceries, to take an analogy from Big Tuna.
Harsh. Yeah, exactly.
You know, to take an analogy from him, like he did it with groceries that weren't always the best groceries, and yeah. So like I think he gets whenever you wanna shut it down, okay, shut it down like a Marv Levy, like a Redskins.
Joe Gibbs.
Like a Joe Gibbs. Like he's earned that.
Yep.
He's earned that. I think Pop's probably earned that. But I think that the pride of Belichick won't let him stay longer than he needs to stay.
To get the record.
Yeah.
To right? get the record, yeah.
You think he'll just stay and get the record and then piece it out?
I do.
Like I think he really thinks he can do it again. That he can build it back again.
No, I think that too. I think you got to think that way. You shouldn't, you know, he wouldn't be coaching, but
yeah, because this is a slow grind. That AFC East isn't going to be easy anytime soon. So, hey, good luck to all of you. You know, all of you Patriots fans that are now getting to remember what it was like on the other side. You know, it's been a while for you guys, but it's cool because you have the Celtics here, and the Celtics are holding you guys down. And so, you know, just keep riding the wave of whoever is the hot team in the, you know, in the area at the time, and everything will be fine.
Well, I'm gonna live. A little clean here for the next 10 days or 2 weeks or so, and just hope that a bottle of Casamigos is coming to my doorstep via the Denver Nuggets. And
I'll just say this: if you get a bottle of Casamigos, that means we don't get our pod, you know, in the garden.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Great call by you again, because we
come on now.
It's happening. I know. Good
pod
point.
In the garden, yeah, Lakers.
There you go.
Yeah. Lakers and yep. Celtics in the garden.
Good call.
And Zebra Strikes podcast live from the steps of the garden. Like,
all right. Well, that's a win-win then.
That's a win-win. And guess what? There's still going to be a bottle of Casamigos there. Either way.
Some way. All right.
It's either going to be you bringing the bottle or me bringing the bottle.
Right.
One or the two.
So good.
You know?
Yeah.
I like it. Ladies and gentlemen, another episode of Zebra Strikes Podcast. I am Coach Gene Clemens. That is Coach Whit LeJour. Make sure that you go out and you not only like the podcast, but follow the podcast. Make sure that you are being an active member of this community. If you, we want to hear from you, leave us some feedback. Hit us up on social at Whit LeJour, at Gene Clemens. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Because you know this, what we do here is it's a labor of love. We talk basketball and we talk sports and we talk a little life because we enjoy it, and we also really enjoy hearing feedback from you. So if you're out there, make sure that you continue to get us to 100 followers. That's the first goal. Get us up to 100 followers, and then we're off to the races from there. Until next time, everybody. Peace.